grant for mental health investigative journalism, a partnership between the Carter Center's mental health program and Reveal for the Center of Investigative Reporting. As WITF's Transforming Health reporter, Brett reports extensively on mental health issues, COVID-19, and health policy for WITF, for NPR and PBS member stations in central Pennsylvania. Carter Center U.S. fellows receive intensive training from leading mental health and journalism experts, along with a stipend to report on approved mental health topics of interest. Brett Scholtis joins us today. Brett, congratulations.
Oh, thanks a lot, Scott. It's really good to be here.
Your project is about how ineffective behavioral health policy and militarized law enforcement lead to crisis situations where police arrest or kill people with serious mental illnesses. Break that down a bit.
Yeah, Scott, a lot of my project evolved out of some reporting that I did over the past few years and some of the reporting I did last year as well. You know, as reporters, oftentimes we're focusing on the granular details of one specific situation. But as you tell more and more of these stories and get a bigger data set, like we started to do last year, you can start to move beyond that to kind of develop a little bit more of a long-term project. And that's what I did here. So I'm going to use a little bit of language here that I find to be helpful for understanding this. So part of my pitch to the Carter Fellowships was that there are two different concepts at work. You know, behavioral health system really requires consent from a person because it respects their choice. And that really sounds good at first glance. But what we find is with people who have the most severe illnesses like schizophrenia, serious bipolar disorder, borderline personality disorder, you know, they often don't get help because they don't want it. And sometimes that's part of a condition known as anosognosia, which is part of their disorder. They don't think that there's anything wrong with them, so to speak. And so what we find is that oftentimes a person just gets worse and worse and worse until they have decompensated to the point where they might be getting in trouble. Someone calls police on them. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's for things like public drunkenness or just, you know, harassment, sort of loitering, a lot of these charges that are associated with a person who might just be very severely in crisis and mentally ill. So we've talked about this idea of consent, right? So then when once police are called, a very different standard is applied. Police are required to demand compliance from anyone they interact with who they need to handle, right? And this is right out of police school. I've talked to state police trainers about this. It is their job to protect public safety at large. They must demand compliance from the person. And so now you have a person who has been neglected by the behavioral health system because of the way the system works. And now they're being told, they may not even know where they are, and now they're being told, you know, stand up, put your hands up, come here, don't do this, put that down. And when they are unable to do that, the police must use force. And so it's that interaction that I find to be really important to focus on, fascinating, and also very dangerous. And when we think about people like Ricardo Munoz in Lancaster, who, you know, was very much the textbook definition of a justified homicide. We all saw that video. But when you look at the long tail of what happened prior to that, we see years of being unable to get help. So that's just one example.
Everyone has a story. Everyone has a history. Our last guest talked about the chapters of a book, and I think that applies even here. It sounds like part of the problem is that people don't get the help that they need before an incident like this arises.
Yeah, but I think it's important to note that that's not when that happens, it's not a fluke. You know, it's often because of institutional forces that are set up in certain ways. And some of the really long history of that even goes back to the deinstitutionalization of our behavioral health care, which, you know, has widely been regarded as broadly a good thing, but yet also sort of we failed to live up to the full funding and full suite of services for people in the community-based system. The community-based system is really good at helping some people, But for a certain subset of people, it's much less good. And there's also very important things to discuss here, such as race and such as gender and the way that different people are perceived. So you may have, I think some people are, especially because of systemic racism, I think black and brown men are much more likely to be perceived right away as threats rather than people who need help. You know, of course, mental health issues affect everyone regardless of their background, but we tend to give different treatment to different people based on how we perceive them and things like their criminal record.
You know, one of the things that I just personally find as a positive is that you're working on a project that you're reporting on mental health, something that doesn't really get as much attention as what it should.
It really fascinates me because so often when I look at issues, whether it's the police shootings of people or people being shot by others or suicide or opioid use, drug use, unemployment, poverty, intergenerational poverty, so many of these issues, sort of the silent partner in these issues are underdiagnosed or undertreated mental health issues. And we have a way, again, of sort of, I think we've gotten better than some places where we certainly acknowledge that mental health issues exist, but we tend to bucket them off into a separate area from other topics and pretend that, you know, now the moment a person has charges filed against them, now they're a criminal. They're not a person who needs help. And there's a way that we do that in our minds. And I think that's this project I'm excited about because it allows me to look at the role of behavioral health care and mental health issues in all those other situations.
Just last week, Brett, you had a story about outpatient involuntary commitment. You had mentioned in the past many people, if they suffered with a mental illness, would be institutionalized. There'd be no questions asked. Sometimes it would be people who didn't suffer from a mental illness who would be institutionalized.
Right.
Tell us about that. What's the aspect of that? In about 2 minutes.
Yeah. So the story that I reported on the other week has to do with something called assisted outpatient treatment, which is a type of outpatient involuntary commitment that uses a different standard. So one of the challenges we face now is that the only way a person who is very severely mentally ill can get help is that they must be a threat to themselves or others. Well, guess what? If you're a threat to yourself or others, you might be getting tangled up in the criminal justice system. You might be getting charges pressed. You might wind up in jail. And then that person might finally get some help, but I'm very skeptical of that. So the outpatient involuntary commitment uses a different standard. It looks at their past history of being unable to get help or not following up with their programs, and no criminal charges are filed. It's a solely civil commitment. Now, I'm not saying I'm even a proponent of this or I'm sold on it. It's not really my job to be a proponent of anything, but I will say it'll be interesting to see how it pans out in Pennsylvania because it's just something we haven't really tried. It was passed into law in 2018, and now a handful of counties, including Dauphin County, are going to give it a try. So hopefully that'll help some people stay out of jail and avoid criminal charges.
We only have about 30 seconds left, and Brett, I want to thank you very much and again congratulate you. Being a fellow, what does that mean?
Oh, it means I get to connect with a lot of other people who have been thinking about this and who are very knowledgeable. So I'm very excited about that. Not just in the U.S. either, all over the world I got to meet people. It's been fascinating.
I would think that also would be fascinating, too, because let's face it, other countries handle mental health, other illnesses differently than the United States.
A lot of stigma out there in some countries. Yeah, a lot more than we have here even, I would go so far as to say.
Transforming Health reporter Brett Shultis. Brett, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Scott.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health at transforminghealth.org. A partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.